Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 20 of Season 3 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action movie Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week, or to finish off his 5 minutes of this movie, since he hasn't seen anything before or after, is Alex Robinson of the Star Wars Minute. Welcome back, Alex.
Hello there. Thanks for having me, and thanks for letting me close out the week.
Yeah, just be careful not to rip apart your computer. You know, when you're done, when you think you're done with it, you never know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might need it later.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, hopefully Theo will be here to help me
fix it. I don't know if he's going to be able to help you. I think he's going to be able to help you rip them apart. I don't think he's going to help you put them back together.
Oh, that's right. He totally bashes all the computers in this scene. So, never mind.
Yeah, I don't think you want Theo. You know, yeah. And especially just be careful if he starts, talking about some sporting event.
Oh, yeah.
Stay clear of him and Carl at that point. Yeah.
They have 2 points.
Exactly. Boom. Boom.
Boom, 2 points.
Yeah. So, minute 20 begins with Theo continuing to type and ends with Hans getting something from Carl as they slickly pass one another. So yesterday we ended the minute with Theo typing away frantically on the keyboard, and today we continue to see Theo typing away frantically on the keyboard.
I guess he's
a guy who likes to type, and you know, he's typing really fast. I wonder if someone who knows how to type so well can try and figure out what he's doing. If someone who's so proficient, is the actor, is Clarence Gilliard, just punching in all these random keys, or is he really typing something? Obviously we'll never know, but
I feel like if Stanley Kubrick was directing this, then yes, he would be typing something specific. I don't know enough about wiretapping, the wiretapping director, but it doesn't, I'm going to say if the director had the guy dropping his coat on the floor, I don't think he's having Theo type a specific message.
You mean if the director had, Carl hold his gun backwards also?
Then it would be different. But I'm going to say he's just randomly just smacking different keys. And this is why I'm going to go into a tirade here. One of the many, many bad things about computers in the world is that it makes, to me, it makes a certain type of action movie less interesting. Because everything is done with computers now, and I feel like we've seen so many times where there's been a movie where they have the quirky hacker character be like, I'm going to get into the mainframe, clackety, clackety, clackety. Oh, there's a lot of security, clackety, clackety. Like, there's nothing exciting about watching someone type at a keyboard, but yet so many stories have to happen because everything in our life revolves around computers now. So,
right. Well, it's because they saw Theo did this, and that was, Theo was the
original,
the mold.
The original that, hacker.
That's right.
Yeah.
There you go.
So,
Now I find it funny and interesting looking at this movie and looking at what computers look like in 1988 compared to, you and I grew up throughout the computer age. So we got to see how things evolved from
evolution,
what we see on the screen here to what we have now. Mm-hmm. And so it's very interesting looking at. I still love watching movies where they say, I don't know if we're gonna be able to put that on the big mainframe computer. We only have, 8 bytes of memory on the computer.
Yeah.
And we're like, 8 bytes, come on.
Yeah. I'm guessing this is too early before the internet, but it would be funny now if he was be like, I'm going to hack into the mainframe. That it was like that, dial up sound
exactly
a thing for a short time in computer history. But
they did have dial up the screeching noises back then, because War Games came out 4 years before this. So War Games, the whole thing about having to put I love how you put the receiver on it. And I know that when we had a Commodore 64, you had to actually detach the receiver, and then you take the connector, and you put the connector into the modem.
Oh, wow.
That's what we
like
had to
physical,
do.
Physical, like a, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's old school.
Yeah, you have to like push down, on the little plastic piece.
Yeah.
On the cord that detaches it from the receiver, and then put that into the modem. That's what we had to do.
Yeah.
you know, obviously.
So, do you, Matthew Broderick in War Games was the first computer hacker, first movie computer hacker?
It's a very good question. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that one.
Yeah.
You know, we know from that movie that the you know, passwords weren't very complex at that point when he was able to steal the school password, which was pencil. Come on. Let's think of something that isn't related to school that we can use in order to try to finish this. I don't know. Let's try pencil.
No,
nobody will be able to guess
passwords that dumb since then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I guess pencil is better than you know, X3 pound G Y uppercase, you know, like nowadays the things that you get as passwords, you know, that
Why
are randomly generated.
My password out onto the whole internet. That I'm gonna change everything now.
Yeah. Well, at least it's not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, exactly. 9, 6, 9, 6, 9, 6, 9.
Yeah. I was actually quoting Spaceballs at that point, but yeah. That's mm-hmm. you know, oh my god, that's the same password I have on my luggage.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's, you guys should probably do Spaceballs, you know, when you're finished.
Neither of us are Spaceballs.
I know.
Someone else would have to do it.
I know.
I'll do History of the World, but I wouldn't do Spaceballs.
No, I understand that. It's hard to do a parody of something that you've taken so seriously for 10 years.
That's not why I don't like Spaceballs. It's not because it's a parody of something I love. I love parodies of things I love, but I just think it's lazy. It's not a good parody of a thing I love.
You don't find anything in Spaceballs funny?
I had no interest in Star Wars. You know what I mean? Young Frankenstein is a loving parody of a thing that Mel Brooks loved. Star Wars is like, yeah, this is a popular thing. I'll make fun of it. You know what I mean? It doesn't have the same.
Like, okay, but I'm assuming there are still jokes in Spaceballs that you like. It sounds like you hate it. You know.
No, it's just not. It's not. You know, I feel like I was old. People who seem to love it are younger than I am. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So it might be the kind of thing where if you saw it at a certain age, you were like, "Oh my god, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life." But
right. Okay. I was 13 when it came out, so you know, I loved it in the theater, and I remember when I saw it. So I was driving back with a friend of mine's father, you know, who took us to the movie, and me and my friend the whole time were quoting the movie and saying, you know, we were seeing the whole line. So he got a little annoyed, you know, that these two 13-year-olds are constantly quoting assholes, you know, but
yeah,
you know, but that's what you do when you're 13.
Yeah. So I think I was like already in college when it came
out. Well, it
was
87. So if you were born in 69, so you were 18.
I graduated high school in 87.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
So.
Okay. That makes sense. But were you as much of a Star Wars fan in 87?
No, I was not. Because
there were only three movies.
Star Wars back in, there were only three movies and it wasn't a thing anymore in 87. Star Wars was kind of like forgotten about. Right. I mean, other than Spaceballs, of course. It wasn't like nowadays where there's Star Wars, new Star Wars every 3 months, a new Star Wars thing. It was, you know.
Right.
So, and also Star Wars, like, anyway.
No, go there. It's fine.
Star Wars side.
You can have a Star Wars.
No, I was going to say, it used to be that when you were a kid, you liked kid stuff, and then you get to a certain age, and you'd like say, okay, you know what? I don't like Star Wars and that stuff anymore, because that's kids. Like, I liked that when I was a little kid, and I don't like it anymore because I'm a different person, you know, now. And so, I might be overly defensive, but
that's okay. Not a problem.
Point is, not a space.
Right. Person. Okay. I understood.
Yeah.
Right. So, first of all, the music of this part of the scene is great also. You know, they do a really nice job of switching the music around throughout the whole movie. But, you know, in this scene, it also adds to the fact, you know, besides the clackety clack of the keyboard. So we get to hear some nice, you know, the music has its own personality, or it adds personality to the way the scene works. So then he locks out the elevators, and we see, first of all, a group of elevators on the computer that says low rise. So there are six elevators that it says L to 16, which means that, you know, they do have elevators that will only go between the lobby and the 16th floor. And then you have another one that says high rise. And there are three elevators there on high rise, and it says L to 34. which I guess that means that all it goes throughout all of those floors, as opposed to just being, you know, like 17 to 34 or whatever it is. And then we see that, you know, he locks out all of them at the 29th floor. And then we also get to see that there's a fourth elevator noticed on that screen, and it says service elevator, and it says L-35. So that's even stranger. You know, you have in the three high-rise elevators that will go to the 34th floor, but if you want to go to the 35th floor, you got to take the express elevator.
Huh.
You'd think that they would all go to the same, you know, you know, when you're building the building, you would have the elevator shafts, you know, go to the same place if they're next to each other.
Yeah, I'm sure that's an option, but I think it's more for that the people on the 35th floor don't have to mingle with all the rest of the slobs.
Could be, but you know, as we'll find out later, the 35th floor is not done yet, and actually neither is the 34th or the 33rd. You know, there are a number of floors that are still under construction.
Wow.
Which adds to the intrigue of the movie. You see, I'm throwing in tidbits here to hook you in.
A building under construction, eh? Wow. Oh, man. That is
what could be on the 35th floor?
Yeah.
Who knows? So, you know, he continues to hum as he's working, you know, pushing buttons, moving things in, and then we get to see the parking garage. We see the gates start to close in the parking garage. We see a group of escalators that stop in the middle and stuff like that. So when do you think the first escalator was invented?
Well, you got me with that revolving door bit.
You were close. You were still, you know, don't knock yourself too much about it.
I'm going to say the first escalator was 1929.
Okay.
19? No. It was before that. 1916.
First working escalator was in 1899, but there were patents of designs of an escalator all the way from 1859. So for 40 years, there were a bunch of people that were putting in patents for this idea of moving stairways, but they just could never figure out how to get it to work. But they still had their patents.
That's weird that you could file a patent, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, of course. The idea of filing a patent is for the idea.
But don't you have to kind of prove that it works?
I don't know.
I
don't know. Absolutely no clue.
It just seems strange. Like, okay, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to patent a unicorn, you know, a unicorn harness.
No, but maybe you need need people to show the design, even if you can't produce the design.
So they're showing you, they're showing you a design that doesn't work. They're saying, yes, I want this to be patented.
No, I think they're showing you a design that they want to work on. Because I think the whole idea of patenting it is so that it's yours and then you don't have to worry about someone else stealing it.
Right. But does it work or does it not work?
Up until 1899, no.
That's what I mean. So like people were basically showing, here's an idea I came up with for an escalator that doesn't work.
Right.
Can I please patent this? Like,
I guess so.
Okay. I'm going to come up with a teleportation machine. Here's my patent. It doesn't work, but at least now it shows that I own the idea of teleport machines.
Again, I'm not a patent lawyer. You know, I go according to what Wikipedia tells me here. So that I couldn't tell you.
Strange.
What can I tell you? Here in 1859, a man named Ethan Ames who was a patent attorney in Massachusetts is credited with patenting the first escalator. Despite the fact that no working model of his design was ever built, his invention, the revolving stairs, is largely speculative, and the patent specifications indicate that he had no preference for materials or potential use. He noted that steps could be upholstered or made of wood and suggested that the units might benefit the infirm within a household use. The suggestive motive power was either manual or hydraulic. So again, it's the idea.
Wow.
So what can I tell you? And
sounds like my transporter is going to be.
There you go.
I don't know what they'll use to build it. I don't know. But that's not my concern.
What, would a transporter be the first thing that you would create if you could?
Yeah, I mean, assuming you're going to rule out time machine.
Well, why would I rule it out? that's the first thing
well,
anyone
so first
wants.
First, I would go time machine. Transporter would be second.
Well, if you create the time machine, you can actually go back in time before 1859 and patent your first escalator before Nathan Ames.
That's my goal. I will build a time machine specifically to steal the patent for the escalator. That's a good.
It's a cash cow.
Yeah.
Now, so, what do you think? Yeah. What do you think the longest escalator in the world is?
Longest escalator in the world. Are you talking in terms of what's my unit? Meters?
Length. You could say meters or feet. But that's fine. I have the answers in both.
I will say 69 meters.
Okay. 138 meters or 453 feet.
Oh my gosh, that was exactly halfway.
Yeah. Wait, how much did you say it was?
I said 69 meters.
And 1 second. And it is 69 meters high. So, hey.
Wow. That's crazy.
Maybe you did invent that time machine and went back and got that answer.
Oh,
got those
man.
Answers. Okay, now.
Or at least I will.
Yeah, and that's in Russia. It's in the deep underground stations of St. Petersburg Metro. So, yeah. Now, the longest freestanding escalator, which is supported only at the ends, which makes me think of maybe like, Temple of Doom type of, rope bridge. I don't know if I would get on an escalator like that.
I'm going to guess that one was 50 meters
long. No, that one is 62 meters long, which is 205 feet long. It rises 8 stories up. It is actually in the CNN Center's atrium in Atlanta. And it was originally built as the entrance to an amusement park, which was called the World of Sid and Marty Krofft. But it's now used on CNN studio tours. So, yeah.
That's worth it just to go on the tour, just to go on the world's tallest non-supported escalator.
Yes, exactly. Go to Atlanta. Go visit Alan and while you're in Atlanta, and you can get on the longest thing. Now, what do you think, according to the Guinness Book of World Records, what is the shortest elevator?
Escalator or elevator?
Escalator. Oops. Sorry. What is the shortest escalator?
I mean, I feel like I've seen ones that are just barely, like, you're at an airport, and there's ones that are just, like, 5 feet or something. I'll say 7 feet.
You should have gone with your gut. So the shortest escalator in the world is known as the Puchikator, which is in the Okadaya Mori's shopping mall in Kawasaki, Japan. It has a vertical rise of 832 millimeters, which is 32 inches, and it only has 5 steps. So you should have gone with your gut when you said 5.
Some very lazy people there in Japan.
Apparently, I guess it's not in the Nakatomi building.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
So, yeah, that's just pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So then we see that there are two more gates that close down the rest of the parking garage, and Theo begins to smile to himself. He's really having a lot of fun, with everything that he's doing. He's not what?
I said he's nuts, that guy.
Oh, completely. I thought you said he's not sad guy. I was like, okay, what does that mean?
he's not a sad guy.
he's just nuts. Well, it sounded the same.
Yeah.
But yeah, that pen doesn't move from the keyboard at all. The pen, maybe it's glued. Maybe it's one of those, maybe it's like Velcroed.
Yeah. Maybe the original security guard, that was his pen, and they kind of mounted it there as like an eternal tribute to the original security guard.
Yeah, to John Larroquette.
Although the building's still under construction, they can't have been open that long.
Apparently they have. I mean, let's put it this way. Holly's been in L.A. for 6 months. So, and my assumption is that most of the building is done. I mean, they're there. It's not as if they just had this party where they said, okay, it's a grand opening also. It's not. I mean, that, they never mentioned it from that perspective. That's a good point, though. It's a good point. I maybe it has to do with how much, you know, money they can, you know, that they can siphon off each time for the, you know, to build each floor, to furnish each floor, I guess you can say.
They're building it one at a time. They're one floor building and they just keep going one. Yeah, who knows how far they can take it?
It's Jenga. It's the Jenga building.
Yeah.
Actually, it's the anti-Jenga building, because if it was a Jenga building, they'd be taking floors away.
Taking more to the bottom and putting them up to the top.
That'd
be a different point.
Right. So all in all, we see about five different gates come down with really loud thuds, you know, to really drill into us of what's going on. Now you didn't see this, but the limo driver who dropped McLean off 2 weeks ago, he's actually in the parking garage and he doesn't notice that any of this is going on. It takes a while. I mean, it takes like an hour into the movie till he figures out that he's trapped in there. You know, he's having too much fun in the back of the limo.
Well, if there are like executives and stuff up there, there must be other limos waiting around for them.
Nope, not at all. This is everyone's office. So they're going to have the limo come pick them up afterwards. John's limo driver waits for him because John isn't sure where he's staying. So they make a deal that he'll wait. Right, he'll wait for him. And, you know, John will let him know if he scores with his wife and finds a place to stay, or if the limo driver needs to find him a place to stay.
Right, but if I'm Holly's boss, I'm the head of the company. When I want to leave this party, I'm not like, oh, call my guy and he'll be here in 15 minutes. I want to just go downstairs. Like my limo driver would be waiting for me downstairs if I'm the head of the company.
Yeah, but
there would be other limo drivers in that situation stuck.
That is a great point, and there are no other limos in this movie. Right. So, Takagi isn't really concerned about that either. Either he's not drinking and he's planning on driving home on his own, or he's got a guy, you know, that he can call and he'll be there in 5 minutes, which is probably more likely.
It is Christmas Eve, though.
Which is probably more likely.
Yeah.
But.
And there's no helicopter on the roof.
Not yet.
Not yet.
More spoilers for Alex.
All right.
And I'll give you another hint. Takagi isn't going to be waiting for a Takagi isn't drunk by the end of the movie. How's that? We'll leave it at that.
Okay. You
know,
all right.
Again, I love these spoilers. Just try to pull you in. Teasers.
Yeah.
So then we get an external shot of Nakatomi once again, you know, in complete darkness. So it gets dark really quickly. Again, this is maybe 6 o'clock at night. So. You know, and then we get to see the elevator doors open and Hans is standing there. You know, and then one of the other terrorists or one of the other people in the elevator, we won't label people at this point because we don't know, you know, wearing a vest, you know, gets out and moves to the left hand side. You know, he's like holding a little bag as he walks out. And then we get another shot of Theo, who is still very happy with what he's doing. He's happy in his work. You know,
loves computers.
Yeah, loves computers and then begins to destroy them. You know, I mean, first of all, the first thing he does is he rips out the cords underneath the keyboard. You know, what's funny is
sparks shooting completely. Everywhere.
Now, if I unplug my keyboard, that's not going to happen. You know, he's doing it a little too enthusiastically. Mm-hmm. You know, but he's happy. He's happy doing that. And then we see him kick in, you know, one of the mainframe servers. You know, also lots of sparks flying. You know, at the same time.
Yeah, I've heard of hacking into the mainframe, but kicking into the mainframe.
And
that's just.
And it would have been even funnier if his like leg caught fire. You know, by kicking into it.
Sort of stuck in the electrocuted and dies immediately. Right.
And then we see the guy in the vest, you know, come into the lobby. He's I'll let you know his name is Eddie. He's the other American in the group.
Eddie Vest.
You know, and you know, he hands a bag to Carl, And we see Hans walk by Carl. And as he's walking by Carl, Carl very smoothly hands something to Hans in his hand. You know, it's done in a very, very smooth mm-hmm. way. So I like the way they did that. And that's the end of the movie for you, Alex.
Yeah, it was kind of anticlimactic, I gotta admit. It was, I thought it would kind of build a bit more of a, like, finale, but it's just kind of like a bunch of people walking around an office. It started with a domestic squabble and ends with a bunch of people walking around an office.
Yeah, well.
So it was not what I
because
thought.
Well, because, you know, you need to go a little further than minute 20 to see what happens. I said you have to go a little further.
Oh, there's more? There's more in the movie? Yes. Oh, wow. That's totally different, yeah.
So. Yes, there's a little bit more going on here. Just a little bit.
Okay.
You know, there's only another 112 minutes to the movie. If you know, it goes by in a flash. You know, so you don't have to worry about that. So you have anything else to say about this minute besides the fact that it's anticlimactic for you?
No. Just like I said, repeat what I said yesterday. People hacking into the mainframe, people doing stuff on computers is very boring to watch. I guess we should just be grateful that they didn't do the thing where, like, someone's doing something on the computer and then suddenly one big word is flashing.
Yeah, alert,
like,
alert,
shut
alert.
Down, shut down, shut down. Yeah, alert, alert, or, like, you know, something like that. So at least it's not.
Right, and also, so. You know, you don't have him, like, trying to transfer something to a disk that takes forever, you know.
Or they'll be like, yes, it'll take 15 minutes, you know, it'll take 12 or countdown on the screen, like how long it'll
exactly.
take. That would be another.
Exactly. Another, I mean, I'll give you a little more of a teaser. Yeah. Theo is not done with his computer hacking and his computer work throughout this movie. There's a lot more going on. So, you know, and it you have to also think of this in the mind frame of 1988 when just about nobody had personal computers, you know, and nobody had much knowledge of computers. You know, nowadays we're all spoiled and you know, every 3-year-old knows more about computers than Theo does. Here. But, you know, back then.
Yeah. Ring or no ring.
Yeah.
When I was looking up the actor, Clarence Gilliard Jr., I noticed that he is in one of the most recent Die Hards playing Theo. So either it's a flashback or he survives this movie, with the latter of which would surprise me.
Well, first of all, that latest Die Hard that you're talking about is a commercial.
Commercial for
I think Duracell or Energizer, when they were selling their Die Hard batteries. Oh. Yes.
Okay. So then I guess he doesn't, but he plays the same character.
Okay. So.
Anyway, weird. So I'm surprised there are multiple levels about that. If it's just a commercial, the fact that they got someone from the original Die Hard.
Well, I mean, they got John McClane in it, and also the limo drivers in it also.
But are these just using stock footage
for
this movie, or did they?
No,
get
they
the
got the actors
back
to play like, wow. play the, these characters.
That's hardcore.
Yeah.
And then it's a battery.
Yes. I'm trying to remember what it was called. I actually just saw it like last week in order to remind myself about this. I can't remember what it was called. But it's just a commercial.
All right. Now forget I'm not going to watch
it. It was in 2020. It came out. It's a commercial for Die Hard car batteries. There you go.
Yeah. How long is it? Like 3 minutes or 2 minutes or a minute?
It's very, very short.
Yeah. But also listed on IMDb, which usually they don't list commercials in there, so I'm surprised.
I the funny thing is, I was looking at where's it listed in IMDb? Under what? That's what I'm saying.
Under the actor Clarence.
No, Gilliard. That I know, but it's under, you know, it's not in a movie. It's listed in a movie? No. It's listed in a movie. Actor short. Somewhere. It's in short. It's called Die Hard Is Back.
There. Oh, okay. But yeah, I didn't think they generally
listed. It's a 2-minute commercial.
There. So it's like a mini, it's like a product, it's like a 2-minute film that has a lot of product.
Yeah, basically. It says Bruce Willis is back as the tough John McClane in a new action-packed commercial for Die Hard batteries.
Okay. So, are you to cover that eventually?
1 minute at a time?
If you get to all the way up to that,
we'll have to wait and see. That will be many years from now. I don't expect to get there that quickly, so we'll see. Mm-hmm. Well, we shall see. So the script, once again, has a few little discrepancies, right? Mm-hmm. So it starts off with the description of Theo in the control room. It says, Theo enters the small control room and comfortably sits behind a maintenance keyboard. Whistling a vaguely familiar tune, he types in some commands and locks down the passenger elevators up to the 30th floor, which in the movie, it's the 29th floor as opposed to the 30th floor, which actually makes more sense, because if everyone's on the 30th floor, you want to lock the elevators on a different floor, not where everybody is.
Right.
You know, then with several more computer commands, he systematically causes the heavy steel gates to the parking garage to close. The escalators to the garage come to a stop. Theo finishes typing and disconnects the keyboard and pulls out the wires from beneath the panel. So in the script, he does it more, you know, quickly. Or, you know, he isn't as aggressive in that point.
Yeah.
And then it says,
much
less dramatic. And it says, the doors to the service elevator open to reveal Hans Gruber, impeccably dressed, lean and handsome. He steps out into the lobby like he owns the building. And in a way, he does. Theo steps to the door of the control room and tosses Hans a computer card. So the script actually tells us that's Theo who's giving something to Hans, as opposed to Carl. And they're telling us that it is a computer card, which I'm assuming in 1988, most people didn't know what a computer card was.
I'm not even sure I know what it is. That like a disc? What is a computer card?
I don't know. No, I know what it is. I'll spoil it for you. It's actually a code card that locks the front door. Okay. It's basically the card that the guard has in order to open and close the door. You know,
okay, so it's
because
like a
there's security. It's a key card. Exactly. It's a security key card.
Okay.
All right. So. Every Friday, we have a surprise segment called Weekend Surprise, where my guest gets to explain why they think that Die Hard is the best Christmas movie around, or that it's not, or whether it's a Christmas movie or not. So I know you've only seen 5 minutes of it, but you know,
at all?
Right. But I mean, you can use based on information you have from other sources, mm-hmm. if you want. You don't have to base it only on the 5 minutes that you've seen. Do you think Die Hard is based on what you've heard about Die Hard? Is it a Christmas movie or not?
Well, you tell.
Or should it be classified? Sorry, should it be classified as a Christmas movie? How's that?
Well, since it does take place on Christmas Eve, I'll go ahead and count it as a Christmas movie.
So you say that anything that happens on Christmas, therefore it's a Christmas movie.
Yes. Yes. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. That's fair.
I didn't notice. Are there any decorations?
You don't sound too convincing about it, but you know, that's fine.
Well, I'm having to weigh in on a movie of which I've only seen 5 minutes of, none of which seem Christmassy to me, but I have heard a lot of people say, oh, you know, Die Hard's a Christmas movie. And so I have no choice but to go along with internet experts who call it a Christmas movie. But yeah, well, I'm trying to think of any other Christmas movies that take
place. No, it's a big debate. It's a big debate.
So there are people who say it doesn't count as a Christmas movie.
Yes.
Because, I mean,
there are people who say that in order for it to be a Christmas movie, it has to have a Christmas theme to it, not music. You know, and therefore, you know, the fact that it takes place on Christmas doesn't necessarily mean that it is a Christmas movie.
Well, I can see their point, because if you told me this movie took place on July 28th, so far I'm like, yeah, it seems pretty accurate. So I don't know. Does a movie, because, you know, over on Godfather Minute, Godfather 1 and 2 both feature scenes at Christmas time. But I don't generally hear people arguing that the Godfather movies are Christmas movies.
Okay, but you have to take something else here, that this entire movie takes place in one day.
More or less.
The Godfather takes place over a period of 50, 60, 70.
Yeah.
How many years? How many years is the whole saga?
Well, GF, I mean, if you count the flashbacks, I guess 19 and 1 through 1997, close to 100 years.
All right.
So, yeah, you're right. That's a different thing. But I'm trying to think if there are any other movies that take place at Christmas but that are not Christmas movies. And why did they have it set? Is the original novel based
on Christmas? How about Reindeer Games? Have you ever seen Reindeer Games?
No, I have not. Not that I remember. Anyway.
With Gary Sinise and Ben Affleck?
Not that I remember. Is that okay? Does that have, well, that has Reindeer Games in it, which refers to a Christmas song. So
again, it takes place on Christmas. Yeah. So is it a Christmas movie or not? That's the thing. But I don't care whether you think that one's a Christmas movie or not. I was bringing that as an example.
Yeah. I will. No, you know what? I'm going to be hardcore about it. I'm going to say if it takes place Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, no matter what else, it is a Christmas movie. If the creators make a point of saying that this takes place on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, it is a Christmas movie. Because why else otherwise have it there? That's what I would say. But it's not like an opinion I would feel that strongly about.
Right. Well, again, you should see the rest of the movie, and maybe that'll help you, form a more solid opinion as to whether you think this movie is or isn't.
Well, from that perspective, the fact that he gets in the third act, he gets rescued by Santa, to me would push it over into Christmas territory. So, if people don't want to count that, then that's their prerogative, I suppose.
Good guess, but that doesn't happen. You should probably check it out. Mm. No, sorry.
Keep my eyes.
Sorry.
Okay. Now you're just trying to trick me into watching the rest of the movie by saying,
you know, I'm not trying to trick you. I want you to see it. I want you to see it with a pure, with pure heart. Not because you.
Now I feel like I should wait until Christmas to watch it or Christmas Eve.
You can do that. This podcast will go till New Year's Eve, so there you go. You can watch it right at the end, and then you'll or you can just listen to the podcast, and you can say that you didn't see the movie. You just listen to it. You listen to it being described.
Over in Godfather, there was at least one listener to the podcast who has never seen the movie, and was only listening to our commentary on it. Have you encountered anyone else who is listening to this who has not, like me, has never seen Die Hard but is still listening?
Well, being at the time that we're recording this, Die Hard hasn't started being,
Okay.
Yeah. This season premiered on July 4th.
Oh, so So if anyone's listening who has not seen Die Hard, give us a call. Let us know.
Get in touch with Alex and you guys can talk about not knowing anything about that.
Yeah. Let's speculate. Give me a call. Let's speculate as to what we think is going to happen.
You start start a club. Start a club.
Yeah, I'm into it.
All right, well, Alex, why don't you one final time tell people how they can get in touch
with you? I'll return to the classic Star Wars Minute. That's the daily podcast in which my partner Pete and I analyze, scrutinize, and celebrate Star Wars movies 1 minute at a time. We are currently towards the end of Solo, and we'll be starting The Rise of Skywalker in 2023. If that sounds like your idea of a good time, go to StarWarsMinute.com or wherever you find podcasts and just oot.
You oot?
Canadians.
You said oot? Are you Canadian? I was going to say, you Canadian? I told you, I grew up near Windsor. No. So I'm able to root out the root oot.
You're able to the, root out. Root oot.
Root out. the Canadian, the Canadians trying to hide among us.
Got me, all American.
All right, and finding me, there you go. And finding me is very simple. Just do a search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find my website. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. So, Alex, first of all, I want to thank you for joining me this week. I want to thank you for being a good sport about me teasing you a little bit about having not having seen the rest of it, and. You know, hopefully one day you will decide to, take the plunge and see what it's all about. Hopefully you'll enjoy it, but at least you'll be able to say, I've seen it. I liked it. I didn't like it, but either way.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, despite the fact that, like I said, I could not watch the rest of the film, at least not yet. Well, but wouldn't it get you mad, though, if now I watched it? Because then you'd be like, I could have watched it right before I did my show.
No, not at all. I wouldn't get mad at all. Seriously, I would be happy because it means it would mean that I was able to convince you that so it's worth your while to check it out.
Okay.
So there's a plus to that too. Okay. That's right.
All right, good.
There you go. You know, I know that Alex Robinson for decades refused to see it. And because I discussed it with him, he said, you know what? I'm going to go check it out. So that would be a compliment. But if you're interested, you know, I'll invite you back next season for, you know, whether it's next season or the season after when I do Die Hard 2, I will gladly invite you back and I'll give you even more juicier minutes, you know, to try to convince you
in the middle to watch that. Nonsense to it. I actually owned Die Hard 2 on DVD for like 7 years and never watched it. So there you go.
Okay.
I was like, well, I want to watch, if I watch Die Hard 2, I have to watch Die Hard 1 first. And then that was where the whole, anyway, save it for another time.
Well, you've said Die Hard 3, so you don't really need to.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. All right. Very good. So, have a great weekend, everybody. And until Monday, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.